and fear and tongue is April 3, year of the bloody damage to April. While the last of the month of the members present today are representative of the group, representative of the group, representative of representative of the group, representative of the group,
Thank you. 7 And if we just have to meet, I'm not talking like a one specific meeting, follow-up rather than anywhere, but there's let's see, May 26th, provided if the member is 10 meeting progress updates each year. And so we basically have a box, so that any time that the parent or guardian doesn't talk to any of those 10 meeting progress updates or into the final one, and by doing the terms of that, just on that final one, that maybe we should have more meetings or more scheduled. But there's going to be a lot of effort to try to schedule the parent or guardian to make it better. If I may, I'll be sure to the department to explain all their vision, their vision to see what works for people.
Thank you. Well, I'll just get that as well, and then I'll self ask the other question. Welcome, Ms. Maureen. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you. I'm a member of the Maureen, and I represent the Department of Education and Early Development. Can you hear me?
Yes, very well, thank you.
Okay, so the way that what I'm going to do is working in the way that I've been doing in the past, and I've been reading to you, is that there's not only regular meetings and sessions with parents, but there's regular communication. The things like this just is identified as a struggling leader, the parents are notified and ready to discuss this. So the entire revision process is going to have a partnership with the parents, keeping them in part of our team, keeping them in part of our time aware of what their students are and progress that's being made, what next steps might be. A truly effective intervention process would actually include a team of educators from the school building that would be working with the parents to ensure the environment between the ecosystem of the child is being addressed and if everyone is being kept informed along the way. So that's how the process of work. So when it would come down to that final meeting, everyone will have been involved in the process, and then that decision could be made. And in that period, every effort will be made to include the parents in that meeting, whatever time it happens, if it happens virtually or in person or whatever way, to have the parents present or involved in the conversation.
I'm sorry, not a question, so I just maybe a comment to the department. This particular section of so page 29.98 related to the school district stepping in and making a decision on behalf of the parent or guardian gives me some heartburn. If the decision making is truly if we're trying to engage parents and guardians to have the section of this language feeding that parent or guardian decision-making authority to the school district feels a little bit concerning. Even if it's with the best interest of the student in mind, and there's several communications that may happen between the family and the school. But I guess just to put on the record that it gives me some pause and some concern that in state statute we would be divesting parent and family and guardian decision making to the superintendent.
If I may, Madam Chair. I'll take the Madam Chair and then give the Chair Representative Sikorski. Well, let me just back up a little bit. Notification and the progress meetings along the outgoing quarter of the meeting was limited down to 10 meetings by any meeting because they didn't want to have so much of a burden of point, a decision must be made as to that whether or not the student advanced forward. And this is section J on page 31, talking about that a little bit. So I'm going to go back to start my fourth paragraph and say the superintendent or designee decides the student's grades.
Thank you.
exercise quality and confidence, beliefs, and commitments, ABCs, science, and elements. And what we acknowledge is it takes a community to raise a child. It takes typically five adults to raise a child, whether it is two parents, two grandparents, an uncle, or two parents, a teacher, or the school janitor, or the football coach, or whatever combination you want to do. We also know that when looking at charter schools, and I haven't mentioned this before, but I previously said this probably to this committee, that there's an association of charter schools that are formed nationally, and they were looking at trying to show the successes of charter schools community. One of the things that they realized is that many parents who did not get their children into charter schools, and because the parents were passionate about their child's education, they followed those children, and they found that those children had the same education result as those children that did make it into charter school, and the finding was it's curriculum involvement. We are trying with this bill to encourage as much parent involvement as possible. Is it going to be successful? I believe we're going to be more successful, but we may not be 100%. And so we get to a point to where we have to make a decision in part with state statute. There are no state protections against any type of retention right now. And so at one point we have to make a decision on what to do with that, and we're trying to strike that balance. But I totally agree that I just tell you about one of my experiences. I went into an elementary school, Dr. Elementary, fifth grade. And when I was in that class, there was one particular student, and I felt bad for being in the class because the teacher introduced me, but one student in particular was interested in me. And the student was very intelligent, but was distracted because she was in there. And he was asking me some very sharp questions that the teacher needed to move on. And I felt bad because I was like, man, can you catch around in the classroom? But I felt bad for that one student because intelligent students probably fall behind because it's easily distracting. And so when I look at the dynamics that we have in the classroom, and I associate that experience, what you were just said, is that one of the key things that we gotta make sure is we gotta make sure we have good working conditions for our teachers, because when you put 35 to 40 students in one class, it is very difficult for that teacher to be able to give the attention that each student needs. That's the other factor that we have to look at. So this doesn't solve everything, but this is things that we need to look at in coming up with a successful plan for children to succeed, and not having that parent involved, and putting that extra burden on the teacher is something that I think we all see in yourself.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry to say that, I do have a meeting with the community in just a moment. I'm actually going to work with them, so I just want to be able to address that real quick while we're on this.
Thank you.
Schedule the meeting section in the ORS, but then during that meeting, a whole bunch of other stuff happened. So it's not like that's the final meeting. And the other issue with this very complex bill is there's a lot of meeting here. And there's a lot of library elements to understand and put together. And when I'm thinking about visual mind as a graphic designer, that a flowchart is mature. Because the other thing is, back on page 29, we're talking about students in grades kindergarten through 2, determining whether they have a reading deficiency. This doesn't happen at the very end of third grade. This child is being assessed continually throughout their entire K-3 career. And I think it would really help to develop a flowchart that has the child, of course, is at the center of it, and you've got the teacher and the reading specialists. As well, that we're communicating, and then you've got the parent outtakes. And the district, as the overarching authority, shouldn't really get involved until the very end, but all those other people in the districts representatives, so to speak. And that stuff is not happening again. But I think a flowchart with colors to help us understand how many contacts there are, when the reports happen, the reports are going between the teacher and the parent, and always involving the parent. And there's lots of opportunities for the parents to respond. And I think if you're getting to the point of deciding about retention, there's a serious issue with the parent not responding, or the guardian, of course, speaking with all of those. And then we've got a lot of kids with issues. We've got kids in foster care. When the kids in foster care, I know we're all here, but we have visitors. They hear that there is a 16-year-old that has 43 different placements in their life since age 8. That kid needs a guide like that to make sure that child learns to read by right through it. Because if that kid is advanced to grade 4, and that teacher is going to read in grade 3, they're going to be even more frustrated in grade 4 because that kid isn't going to know how to read. That kid isn't going to be able to learn the concepts of social studies and math and science without being able to read. So it's critical that we figure out how that path works, how many opportunities there are for interventions of all parties, and schools and teachers are definitely but parents also have to be held accountable. And if there isn't a parent that's being held accountable, we've got to figure out how to have that conference, how that gets one, that the parent is not engaged. And on other issues, the parent may be dealing with domestic violence, that parent may have a jobs issue, something that isn't allowing them to focus on the needs of their child. I personally think we should have lessons to have children, but that ain't happening anytime soon. In the meantime, we've got to help those parents understand how to get that accountability. And as Representative Clark said, charter schools, they require the pre-engaged parent to get a kid into a charter school in the first place, and the charter schools can require parental involvement. We're clearly requiring parental involvement in this process. That charter schools can require that as part of their charter. And the proof is that when you have parental involvement, you have successful children. And almost every child is fully capable of learning to read. And I know that our educational institutions really focus on that. So the children will succeed. But for this committee and for the school, I'd just like to understand this bill. I think a full chart would help in terms of identifying all the opportunities that every person involved in this child's journey has to make sure that child is being supported along the way. Thank you, Madam. I think
so glad to answer the question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I mean, that special question is just agreement with what we have done in respect to seeing the visual flow from the visual interaction of what the pyramids inspection would look like in practice. I appreciated Representative Tuck talking about sizes of classrooms, that's an issue in some urban districts, and districts like mine who have teachers that are teaching a variety of modules in some communities. But I think it would be helpful to see the mandates that this policy would put on in a classroom environment, but also the opportunities for engagement of the family. But, I would just continue to say that with respect to, I appreciate these, and I think this is not intended to be a retention bill. I think that creating stringent measures that, again, by March 1st, really are seeing that parent or guardian decision making feels like it maybe gets a little bit more investigative from that perspective. And so I think being able to see the visual outline of what the interventions, classroom engagement, the family engagement looks like alongside, keeping in mind that all of the considerations that we took on with respect to the immigrants and families, and then I feel like Representative Cup, speaking to the immigrants in the classroom, I think that that would be helpful in terms of finding a sweet spot to make sure that it's not a retention bill. Teacher retention in some parts of the state. Can you speak to how the Department of Ed intends to provide or how the state in this situation would provide the support for teachers in the classroom to accomplish this work. Capacity support. as the department in consideration of this, and in District 29, I recall, because I'll just share a story of one of my best friends, both of her parents were teachers and were lost there for a long time. But we've not seen that same sort of tenure of teachers in my district in particular since some of the retirement programs have changed over the years in providing adequate supports for the teachers' personal decisions as an educator. But all that being said, I think there are some challenges in terms of the teacher's capacity in the classroom. And so can you speak to what the department has considered with respect to individual teacher capacity beyond professional development?
Did you hear the question?
Thank you.
And any other questions? Thank you. Do you have any other funding?
Asking Spirit to help.
Starting on 1/28, Section 35 establishes a loss of budget for D.30.770, the permanent reading program. This is an intensive reading adventure program that people provide and much support to school districts. Thereby, the tools are putting 25% of school districts that staff have to program students. These may select up to 5 schools. Previous association, it was up to 10.
I'm confused by that last comment on 32. To provide direct support for an intervention in social services, services annually, in the lowest performing 25% of schools, for school districts of schools. Alaska has over 500 physical school buildings. It's much more instead of with that 25% of 500, it's in the neighborhood of 125 or so, if I'm not mistaken. How are we ever going to get support for that least 25 lowest performing, 25% of the lowest performing schools if we're not focusing on more than 5 schools per year? That would be the eye-opening statistic.
Even schools are completely different students. Not necessarily means all the schools that are within the eligible population. Additionally, these conversations that happened last year with previous legislation where the number from was originally 10% and was increased to 25% to allow for residential eligible. But this year, that previous legislation also had 10 participating schools. It would be included in this trial program that we continue to explore its efficacy and basic directly. Also, the annual program is one that we're taking for the early term school work resume assistance.
I'm still concerned about how we're going to reach every child before we focus on a fraction of the communities that need help. In fact, somewhere there must exist a list of all school districts, all schools in each district, and what grade levels each school starts. Could you please provide that to the committee at some point? I think that would help us understand the reach of the education community that we are responsible for.
Thank you, Mark John. And if that's something you could provide us,
necessarily a bad idea to
setup document, implement, see how it works in a limited focus number of districts. If it works wonderful, then go out with a leaf file description and then you roll it out in markets. But if it worked in this situation, not so much in that situation, we might find out in a couple of years that we might have to do something different. So there's no point in launching it to a broad market until you test it in a smaller specific market. So I'm not comfortable with limiting it. So you just might come back and resell it.
I think the challenge there, and I appreciate that more, and I absolutely agree that I'm a big proponent of data programs, and I appreciate the work that the Office of Sustainability has been doing on that front with respect to, I think, trying to see how we can help support the state of legislation. I think the challenge there, though, is that largely, if legislation moves forward and we've adopted it, it puts these requirements on districts, and the important aspect of ensuring that we have the supports for the students, the teachers, and districts to help bring our students up to reading proficiency. I mean, I think this is one of the most important elements of the bill. We've outlined early education aside, we've outlined this morning a lot of the intervention strategies and the work that's going to be involving our school districts, but I think without the necessary supports to those school districts, we're not achieving anything. Speaking of time here, I welcome the sponsor's office to speak to us. We're not achieving what the whole vision of this particular legislation is, which is to support the students' eventual academic achievement.
If we're only serving a tiny fraction of students who need support, and every single one of them does, until you're determined to be progressing appropriately for their age, we've got 10,000 students a year in each grade level moving through the system. And if you're only addressing, I haven't even done the math yet, 150 of those 10,000 students, with a lot of students that are moving through the system that may not succeed in being ready to read by the third grade, and that's 60% not ready to read, isn't going to change much if we don't make sure we reach as many communities as possible. And this is an evidence-based program. That means it's been done somewhere else, or those portions of the reading process have been done in other places and have been proven to work. It's not that we're trying something that's never been done before. So I'm going to advocate for a way to reach as many as possible, of course, making sure that teaching communities are supported properly so that they can provide this complex program and reach as many children as possible and nurture.
I think that those comments about programs like how standards that have done it, I think I agree with it. The key here is making sure our current districts are supported and that the specialists that they need to provide some students and many of them are going to provide some students as well. Many are doing those programs and they're also not staffed and putting out a lot of the duties. And as we add everyone having a meeting intervention plan, I think it's a really strict idea because we want to send that to not all of the staff at the local districts to do this work. So that's definitely something that we need to think about. Yes, we're just going to address you, Madam Chair. I think this is maybe a question for the department. I'm interested in bringing a better understanding of how the application process for the there's kind of a bell network. And it's clear through the data that's being provided to the department where the lower performing schools are. Can you speak to what the application and the approval process for this department sponsored program?
Okay.
districts like K-3 schools who help provide training for staff that resources for districts to develop culturally appropriate assessment tools. So far as providing deed with the resources, if there's a school that has developed that material, just to make sure that it captures all of those particular points in legislation.
Sorry. I guess in the department, we were talking about on page 33 in that point of time participating with schools. The number of schools we intend to serve are really, if I'm thinking, the place that makes you intend to rule this out. Does the department have a vision of the resources that would be people that are available to develop this and implement it, and how many schools get the department in measurements that they said they have the capacity to serve over the next 5 years?
Thank you. So it would take two or three years if this passed. It would be two or three years to spool up to find the people to implement the program, etc. Into what we were talking just before about hopefully the program. I'm guessing the statistics. This program, our civil program, was implemented in a given area of the country for several areas, but there's all kinds of different cultures. I mean, I think between the last areas. So it would seem that the rollout and the development of this program is going to take several years to spool it up to a point. Does that sound
budget bill, the operating budget bill, and on page 10, I have
was, I believe, this was an amendment that was added by the budget subcommittee for the Department of Education this committee. And it says, I will read it into the record. And normally we don't talk about our bills, but it's important to note all that. This paragraph is going to help lay the groundwork for what we're looking to accomplish here. This bill, House Bill 64, excuse me, is not operating in a vacuum. Schools are already teaching kids to read. And as we know from the statistics, at least 40% of those kids are reading at grade level when they should be. So, there are school districts that are succeeding and succeeding very well. And the operating budget says on page 10, start on 123, it is the intent of the legislature to get a baseline assessment of current practice in Alaska's 53 school districts, including but not limited to adopted K-3 reading curriculum and assessment tools, dyslexia reading screening tools, intervention strategies and timeline, frequency of parent-teacher conferences for those students experiencing reading deficits, teacher and staff training offered to support K-3 reading instruction, and number of certificated K-3 teachers with reading endorsement. The department is to provide a report of findings to the finance co-chairs and the Legislative Finance Division on or before December 1st, 2021, and notify the legislature that the report is available. I don't believe that we're going to pass it. I have to know this before I have this committee, before we adjourn for the year. So we have time. We may have hearings over the summer. I'm waiting on it. But in the meantime, the legislative department is going to be gathering this information for us, hopefully, and providing it before we convene again in this building next January. And this will help us understand where school districts are now. And I wouldn't be surprised if the department already has a lot of this data, but we're asking for this data to be provided to the legislature and subsequently to the education committees as we proceed with this reading bill. But I just thought I would remind us that the budget bill also contains funding statements like this that will help us in our work in this committee. Thank you, everybody. I hope this committee and also the finance committee work did regain one of the department's positions to explicitly focus on reading and getting an assessment of where we are right now in different districts. So we look forward to that report. We hope this continues to go through. And we will be working really hard on this bill this week and having public hearings on it tomorrow night. And also on Saturday, getting input from the public and then listening to the intentions of the committee, I think, after those hearings that can be about the bill. So, and as for Representative Dillon, thank you, Representative Dillon. It is Thursday, and I appreciate that clarification. Proceeding, and I really appreciate all the members coming to this. Any questions, and assistant and professional development plans for district staff
step in and help with the community practice question.
He said, you guys fit the curriculum, or I even speak to the site here, well, but it's going to be thought of by the need, and that doesn't exist in our own
problem. But where's my opportunity?
Wait.
Thank you.
reasoning and in our presentation to the state does not that we have many individuals who need to work on that
background. And so, thank you. Is there data in the statute on regulation? I think I understand that.
This morning about providing resources and a potential amendment for the department to provide direct support to school districts to develop this material. In a circumstance where the evidence-based reading components do not align perfectly with culturally cultural way of learning and knowing, how does the department intend to navigate the, any potential conflict there?
Thank you.
having this on my board right now, and when I was just looking at my notes right now, I saw that we finished reading interventions a lot more than one with early education. I don't know if people are prepared for that today, but I am wondering if people, we have 20 minutes left if you'd like to. I'm sorry, go to early education because I didn't talk about that, or continue with physical education, or call it at the end.
will also say there are many people out there that with a bit of training would be qualified, and they don't have a legal date yet. So there are some businesses out there that would. I'm not sure how many or if someone can ask, but we can get to the bottom of how many educators already endorsed it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
kind of new territories, but we needed an opportunity to be a place where we then could adapt some of their certificate courses and additional professional development continuing education courses. I believe the exception is developing a after that, however, as Mississippi pointed, that was a component added many years after they recognized the actual strength in leading interventions and in early education.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to ask about the corrections test. I wasn't sure if you still did that, and it's been a while since I did a corrections test, but I mean, you may have done your corrections test is basically the knowledge of the subject. In order for this to be an effective program, you are going to have to have a reading specialist train your teachers to do that job specifically. And that could be having a little bit of a service and they still can't put it as a reader, and having that teacher in and out of the classroom, with less transactions. I remember when I first became a teacher, I said, I can't learn first grade class, and I had no idea in reality of actually how to teach kids how to read. And it began with practice, it came with excellent teachers showing you. So, in order for this program to actually work, we are going to have to hire those specialists to continue to train our teachers. Thank you.
Thank you for that. And then I have one last question, that I think we will then be done to observe. The question has to do on page 26. It has to do around 23, when we talk about incorporating these programs for remedial instruction, and also on 1.7, how that instruction be implemented, as well as any outside of regular school hours is directed to the student's individual reading improvement plan. And I know that we'll take extra resources, and I'm just wondering how is that going to be implemented and funded, because that would be an extra time to write hours. And I would like to direct you to page 111, where it says these key intervention services must and I said practical. So in terms of the school district, if it's not practical or possible, those would not be part of the required reading intervention services the district would provide. However, with regards to additional support or construction measures with the first outside of schools under the adaptive school program, I think it would be very much a local school resource and decision on what part of these interventions that you're able to offer now. Thank you for that. This will conclude our work at Hospital 164 for today. We will return to the film on Wednesday and we'll focus on early learning. We'll see you in 10 by 10 and if any questions come up about reading interventions, we can address them out there too. So our next meeting is Wednesday, May 5th at 8 a.m. We'll get started to go for the edition of South 32 College Grant for Hospital System, High School Students, and again, continue our review of Hospital 164. Please note we have two additional meetings this week to hear from the public on Hospital 164. We will get the meeting here and the Betty Davis Committee. We are Thursday evening, May 6th at 6:30 p.m. and Saturday, May 8th at 9 a.m. for public testimony. Those testifying are asked.